Why the B in BP is such a problem.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good day to you from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. We're going to get a take on the global perspective now. What's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects the United States. BP used to stand for British Petroleum. And as the oil gusher in the Gulf enters its seventh week, there are signs the British business and political establishment are rallying to support the battered company. Marketplace's Jeff Horwich reports.
President Obama this week told the huge Today Show television audience he's figuring out who's you-know-what to kick over the Gulf oil spill. It's clear in London just whose bum he's aiming for. And Caroline Bain of the Economist Intelligence Unit says there's a growing resentment that the president doth protest too much.
There is a feeling that perhaps because of Obama's quite precarious position himself at home on this issue, that he's using BP as a bit of a scapegoat.
The mayor of London has called Obama anti-British. Meanwhile, Obama has suggested he would have fired BP CEO Tony Hayward and that BP should put off its dividend payments to investors. That could be a hard sell in a country where many people rely on BP stock in their retirement plans. British Prime Minister David Cameron is hoping to cool things down in a phone call this weekend. But his conversation with Obama will come as government scientists now estimate the spill may be twice as large as we thought. I'm Jeff Horwich for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. In Europe, shares are higher, 0.5% or more right now. Healthy gains for the Asian markets, too, 1% to 2% higher today. Wall Street yesterday, positive economic data had investors doing a little buying. The Dow's back above 10,000, up 273 points to close at 10,172. Right now, tens of thousands of soccer fans are making their way to Johannesburg's Soccer City Stadium. It's the first game of the World Cup. The sporting event happens every 4 years, and South Africa is hosting the event 16 years after its transition to democracy and after years of steady economic growth. Reporter Gretchen Wilson is there. Hi, Gretchen.
Hi, Steve.
What's the mood over there?
Well, the mood is absolutely electric here in Johannesburg. South Africans have been waiting for this moment since it was awarded the bid to host the World Cup back in 2004. And the hope is to show off South Africa's economic prosperity and really once and for all bury the past, bury apartheid.
South Africa, Gretchen, is a pretty unequal society. Is the World Cup unifying people, black and white, rich and poor?
Absolutely, Steve. And you're going to be hearing a lot about that in the coming weeks. But at the same time, one thing that I'm finding is a rise in xenophobia in neighborhoods of the poorest of the poor. It's really aimed directly at immigrants who live in those communities, and many are from elsewhere in Africa, places like Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and Somalia. And many of them are owners of small businesses, like little convenience stores or grocery stores.
Why these small business owners?
Some immigrants are setting up shops in these poor neighborhoods, and that's sparking a lot of resentment and jealousy amongst the poor South Africans whose lives really haven't changed since the end of apartheid. There are a number of reports of small business owners getting verbal and written warnings from their neighbors that they have to leave before the World Cup is over or face some vigilante violence or being chased out of these townships.
So what's being done about that?
Well, the government's revived a high-level committee to address xenophobia. Community groups are also doing a lot of mobilizing in these poor neighborhoods. But the hope is that these really just remain rumors and that the excitement and the unification and the positivity of the World Cup is going to really dissipate the tensions in the poorest communities. It's a really hopeful time in South Africa right now.
Gretchen Wilson reporting from Johannesburg. Gretchen, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by The Economist, covering news and ideas from around the world and the connections between them. The Economist, on newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com. And by the Batten Institute, advancing knowledge about entrepreneurship and innovation at the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business, www.batteninstitute.org.
We're still digesting the tepid employment picture from last month. Some fear a jobless recovery could turn into another downturn. Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich is professor of public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Steve.
So what's the likelihood of a double-dip recession?
I'd say close to 50-50 now. The May jobs report shows there's not enough oomph in the economy because consumers don't have the dough. Only 41,000 private sector jobs last month. We need at least 100,000 just to keep up with population growth.
But aren't there lots of economic boosters, Bob? The stimulus, and we've got, you know, very, very low interest rates, inventory replacements.
Yeah, but these are all running out. 75% of the stimulus has been spent. The Fed is already starting to worry about zero interest rates causing more inflation down the road. And most inventories have been replaced. Consumers have spent down their savings.
And what about the positive news we keep hearing? The economy is growing fairly well and pay is a little higher?
Well, this is all true, Steve. But in a typical recovery, we would expect far better. And we've fallen into a far deeper hole than in a normal recession. So the recovery has to be much bigger.
Why is the recovery so different?
Well, you see, most recessions are caused by the Fed overshooting in its efforts to control inflation and raising interest rates too high. So it's pretty simple for the Fed to reverse course, cut rates, and get the economy back on track. But the Great Recession was caused by the bursting of a giant housing bubble, which directly reduced the value of most people's biggest asset. Consumers can no longer use their homes as ATMs.
What about exports, Bob? Can we rely on exports to boost the economy and avoid a double dip?
Well, that's what everybody hoped for. But uncertainties in Europe have made the dollar a safe haven and thereby raised its value, which makes our exports more expensive. Even worse, Steve, Europe, China, and American state governments are all cutting spending and raising taxes, which is about the worst thing you can do when consumers still can't and won't spend.
So what then will Washington do, Bob, if a double dip is on the horizon?
Well, not very much, I'm afraid. The deficit hawks are in the ascendancy now, and they're focused on long-term deficits. But, of course, long-term deficits will only get worse if we don't get this economy moving, and far worse if we dip into another recession.
Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich, Professor of Public Policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Bob, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
And finally, I can think of so many other things I'd like to do than help someone move. New York Magazine reports 24-year-old young Min asked a couple of classmates to get his stuff from Queens to the Upper West Side. But he didn't have a moving van or even a car. Only the subway, and they had to transfer at Times Square. They lugged a collapsible closet, a ton of books, even an air conditioner that broke halfway there. Needless to say, it took more than one day to do the move, so when Min called the classmates to help for a second day, no one answered the phone. This is the Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.